Coach.
Chip, be next now.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the City Council meeting for October 13th of 2015. The time right now is 7 p.m. Ms. Smoot, will you please call the roll?
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Camp, Davis, and Gamble.
Thank you. And we received word late today that Councilmember Cutterback would be approximately 20 minutes late. Councilmember Rasmussen and Councilmember Gearing would not be here this evening, so unless there's disagreement, we'll go ahead and consider Councilmember Rasmussen and Councilmember Gearing as excused absences. Okay, Councilmember Davis, will you lead us in the pledge?
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First item that we have under our agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. It is AB 15-171, confirmation of salary commission appointment. As there is not a timeliness, there's not a deadline for this, and my appointment is not able to make it this evening, but would like to be here to be sworn in. I'm going to go ahead and move this out 2 weeks and confirm his availability for that day. Does anybody have any concerns about that? Salary Commission won't be meeting again until most likely the summertime. Oh, Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Not about that, but since Councilmember Rasmussen will not be here tonight, I've already signed the check, so can any other council member sign?
Yes,
the answer is okay. Like all the staff members are saying yes.
So if someone can do that, that would be great. It's sitting right here. Thank you.
Okay. Which council member will be signing them then? Okay, Councilmember Camp.
Done.
Thank you. All right, anything further? All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Each speaker is limited to approximately 15 minutes. And the first person that I have who signed up to speak is Mr. Fred Walzer. Mr. Walzer, please state your name and address for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm Fred Walzer. I live at 850 Village Way. And I'm also chair of the US2/SR522 Safety Coalition. And that is the reason I am here tonight. You have a City of Monroe resolution before you to be acted upon, and right from the get-go, I would urge this council to please support that resolution. There are several reasons why. US2 Safety Coalition has taken on 522 as a project also last January, February, March. I was in Olympia lobbying our legislature as they were working on the transportation revenue package and asked to have the $58 million to finish the four-laning of SR-522 from the Snohomish River Bridge south to Albee to eliminate some very serious issues concerning safety, road rage incidents, and congestion. We came within a whisker of having that inserted in the revenue package. When I left, I was assured that we would get it by the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. However, several weeks later, I found out that partisan politics had entered into the fray, and that was removed. And that's a tragedy for all of us who live up here, as well as residents of Seattle and King County, who use that road to go to Stevens Pass, skiing, and so forth. So to that end, we intend, the Safety Commission, intend to be back at Olympia pounding on the doors again, asking for an insertion of $58 million into the transportation budget to start to finish that highway now. Not years from now, but now. And we all understand the congestion if you've driven the 522 at all at night. It is pathetic. So, and there's some history involved here also. Many years ago, we found out that some former administrations at Snohomish County had worked a deal with the state to move the funding for the new four-lane and the 522 bridge to what was called Phase 2 of 522, and that's to four-lane the highway up to the river. And then at a later date and time, they would finish the four-lane to US 2. The problem we found out after talking to the then Senate Transportation Chair was quite simple. If that money designation was changed, two things would happen. Number one, you would lose the environmental impact statement for the bridge. And two, the money remaining would go back into the transportation general fund and go to other projects, and we would never have the four-lane to US 2 or the Snohomish River Bridge because of the salmon enhancement rules on this, on the river. It would be impossible to get a new statement, and that came directly from Senator Haugen at the time. So we asked that the money be left where it was, and subsequently it was, and we've got the four-lane and the bridge built. Now the problem exists on Phase 2, and that, according to Lorena Ng, who is a district engineer for this area for WSDOT, the cost is projected to be $58 million. We believe if the state can spend $8.4 billion digging a hole in Seattle, they can spend $58 million to do something beneficial for drivers on 522. And so we're going to be back down there, not exactly lobbying in those terms, but we feel pretty strongly that that money needs to come here to our citizens. What will help us greatly this time around is resolutions from the City of Monroe, Monroe School Board, and anybody else that wants to join in and lobby by calling their legislators, Senator Pearson, Representative Christensen, and the chairs of the two transportation committees. Senator King is chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, and Representative Judy Cliburn is chair of the House of Representatives Transportation Committee. The other good thing in our favor is the vice chair of the House Transportation Committee is Senator Luis Moscoso from Bothell, and part of 522 is in his district. And when I talk to him, he says, Fred, you're preaching to the choir here. But he's one person. But if we can line up and unite behind this resolution, I think it will swing a lot of weight and make it much easier in Olympia to sell this project. And that's my pitch, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you,
Mr. Is there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Walzer.
Thank you.
And just to clarify, the resolution that you have before you was drafted this evening. Recognize that it's last minute, but it was created so that you can view it. If the council would like to take action on it later, I was going to introduce it during the mayor's moment, you know, mayor's report out at the end. You can certainly either vote on it as early as this evening or move it forward to another meeting, whatever the case may be, but I just wanted to explain what's on your positions there. The next person that we have who has signed up to speak is Kim Reed Olszewski. Please state your name and address for the record.
Yes, my name is Kim Reed Olszewski. I live at 242 South Blakely Street in Monroe. I'm here to talk about the intersection on Fremont and Blakely, the stop sign removal. And I understand that in the 90s that the traffic was discouraged by going through Fremont by putting up the stop signs. And that now with traffic increasing, we are encouraging by using a formal sign to take the traffic off of Main Street and to turn it onto Fremont to go up to 203. I think that with the increases in the pedestrian area that has been improved on Main Street, that we have a lot of pedestrian traffic and we have safety measures that we've taken to widen the sidewalks, to have crosswalks, the flags, and just a half a block away, I feel that the intersection is not safe. We have no crosswalks, no street lights, limited visibility due to the angle of the way the road comes on to, from Fremont, from Main Street, and the narrowness of the street and the parked cars. Also, there is a lot more parking from the businesses onto the side streets, so we have a lot more people walking from their cars down to Main Street. I, so saw that the regulations are from the MUTCD regulations and 2B.07. And I read further where there says options, and on C it says locations where a road user after stopping cannot see conflicting traffic and is not able to negotiate the intersection unless conflicting cross traffic is also required to stop. I feel that that's pertinent to that intersection. Also, I brought pictures of the intersection in case anyone is unfamiliar with them. Just showing that there are no crosswalks there, there's no lighting, nothing there, and I feel like that's an issue, and it's going there. I feel that it's unsafe and there's an accident there of some sort. Thank you.
Next person that I have who signed up to speak is Mr. Ken Krzyzewski. And I'm going to pass the pictures down another one. Please send these back this way.
Yep. Good evening, council members, Mr. Mayor. I'm one of the walkers in this neighborhood. I walk with my family, my friends, and my pets. I experience this particular intersection every day, walking up to Highway 2 to get the bus to go to work. I walk this pattern when I frequent the businesses downtown, Napa, the post office, the restaurants on Main, and even to go down to the other end of town to Grocery Outlet and Sherman Williams. So Monroe is a really walkable town. In this neighborhood, a lot of people walk these similar patterns. And I think this pedestrian traffic was safer with the east-west stop signs in place. We work on our house quite a bit. We're outside a lot. We see people of all ages walking around with their families, their friends, their pets. People with strollers, people in wheelchairs, biking, skating. It's a pedestrian active neighborhood at all times of day and into the night as well. With the route indicator sign to 203 added, and the regulating stop signs and stop lines on the pavement being removed from Fremont, a direct 25-mile-an-hour street has been created from Main Street to 203, with Blakely Street as the cross street in the middle of it. I don't think the east and west visibility from Fremont is adequate at this intersection. I think the east and west stop signs of Fremont are needed. When I'm standing on the south corner of the southwest corner of the intersection, that's this, the corner here where the shrubs and the cars are. If there are cars in this space, the sight lines are difficult to get anywhere near where this lane of traffic is coming. With the shrubs and the cars, there's a similar condition up here where we have these cars parking along this street on the northeast side of Fremont coming from this way. That's typically the way that I would walk home, but I see the same sort of limited sight lines. I would encourage anyone considering the configuration of this intersection to be that driver. Be the driver that takes the right turn from Main, proceeds on to Fremont, and over to 203. I did that when I noticed that the sign was out. I wanted to experience it for myself, both from the driver perspective, going both ways, and from the walker's perspective, standing on each corner, just kind of looking around, seeing where the cars are, potentially thinking of what types of vehicles could be there. We have, someone standing there. If there's a vehicle that's as tall as they are, or taller, they're not going to see it. We have small cars, we have SUVs, we have trucks of various sizes in the area, delivering, making deliveries, parking, etc. I would also support, or I would also suggest, reposting the east-west stop signs just to see what happens. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have one more person who signed up to comment. Councilmember Hanford, did you want to speak now?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I must have missed the address. Could you give us your address again for the record?
Kenneth Olszewski, 242 South Lakeland Street.
Thank you.
Okay, the next person that I've had, anything further? The next person that I have who signed up to speak is Andrew Martin. Mr. Martin, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record?
My name is Andrew Martin. I live at 421 South Blakely Street, two blocks south of the intersection in question, which I'm about to speak of. And on behalf of the residents of South Blakely Street, please, 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 pretty please put our stop signs back up. And I'm not going to beat a dead horse. I think the other two citizens articulated quite well, but it's just dangerous. It's dangerous if you're a pedestrian. There are no crosswalks. There's blind spots. The red lines aren't long enough, and people blow through there. And when they got taken out, I totally got it. I was like, oh, I get it. There's construction happening on Main Street. We need to divert the traffic through this little side street. Totally fine. That was a great decision. The construction's done, and the stop signs need to come back up now just because it is dangerous. Dangerous as a pedestrian. I see you walking around. I walk across that intersection twice a day. Dangerous as a driver also. So again, pretty please put our stop signs back up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak this evening? Okay. We'll go ahead and continue on then with our agenda. Oh, I'm sorry. Is there somebody out in the lobby that wanted to come in? Okay. So we're going to move on to the consent agenda. Council? Councilmember Kent?
I'm moving to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, the first from Councilmember Kent, the second from Councilmember Campbell. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you. The next item that we have on the agenda is under unfinished business. This is the comprehensive plan update. Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, this will be an update as well because I had hoped to have been here today to let you know that the Planning Commission took action to actually recommend to you the comprehensive plan. It was on the agenda last night, but I probably should have put the comprehensive plan ahead of the other item on the agenda because the other item on the agenda was the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and rezone, and that hearing went over 3 hours. And so by the end of 3 hours, I think the Planning Commission, we talked about it a little bit, but they decided just to during the meeting go home, and then we'll deal with this issue next week at the meeting on the 19th. So at this point, though, the Planning Commission, if you go to the city website, there's on the comprehensive plan webpage for the city, there's a series of comprehensive plan chapters and appendices under a title of October 9 version. That's the version the Planning Commission is looking at right now. I think they were ready to make a recommendation last night. There's findings that are required. The findings that the Planning Commission has developed over time are actually part of your packet, so you can kind of get a sense of the thought and philosophy behind what the Planning Commission has done and what they plan to recommend to you. But that's where we are right now. Later on your agenda tonight, there's a proposed resolution 18-2015. And that resolution actually sets the expectation that we'll get this done. The Planning Commission will get the recommendation to you, and hopefully the Council can work through the document in November and complete the process November 24th. So I'm just kind of jumping ahead a little bit, so kind of shorten my presentation at that point in time. But that's also on your agenda tonight. And that concludes my presentation right now, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Council, do you have any questions about the comprehensive plan? Thank you very much, Mr. Osaki.
Thank you.
The next item that we have on our agenda is AB 15-179. This is discussion stop signs at Blakely and Fremont. Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. As part of the Main Street Plaza project, the stop signs were removed from the intersection of Fremont and Blakely on the east-west legs of Fremont. This was to provide for more less than the amount of traffic that's going through downtown and making a right turn at Main and Lewis if they were just going down to SR2 on the way to Duval. That stop sign was originally put in the 1990s as an encouragement to get people to drive through downtown. At that time, it was not warranted. It was a administrative decision by the then city administrator to install that. As part of this project, we removed that stop sign because following the traffic intersection counts we did in December of 2014, the traffic volumes were not sufficient for having a stop sign for that intersection, and we just recently completed another round of traffic counts for the last week, just to make sure that the amount of traffic that was increased on that street by removing the stop signs did not increase the number of trips that required or indicated that a stop sign would be required at that intersection. The vehicular volumes that the manual and uniform traffic control device calls for is 300 cars per hour on the main legs approaching the intersection for 8 hours in a row. And during those same 8 hours, 200 cars on the lower streets. Currently, the Fremont traffic is the peak hour during the day is about 150 cars entering the intersection, and then the low street of North Blake or South Blakely is about 25 cars per hour. So it does not meet that requirement. The pedestrian volume is very low at that intersection. One of the things you can do is you can be on the side street, if you have a combined volume of cars, bicycles, and pedestrians at 200, that's another indicator for the for having a four-way stop at that intersection. It does not meet that. The 85th percentile speed is over 40 miles an hour. That's another indicator. It's not all the legs of the intersection, the 85th percentile. Speed was less than 25 miles an hour, except for people going southbound on Blakely Street, which is 32. It's not an area of high pedestrian volume. High pedestrian volume would be in the hundreds of people per hour, which does not occur there. The sight distance, yeah, the northbound or southbound does meet the requirements for the amount of sight distance. In fact, because the stop sign was there before, there's a 30-foot red zone for no parking on Fremont, which is actually 10 feet higher, longer than the voter would be if that stop sign hadn't been there before, or believing that, so there's a little extra space for sight distance. So that's it, and so state law requires that you, to the maximum extent possible, follow the guidelines that are in the manual and uniform traffic control devices, and based on those guidelines, a four-way stop is not indicated at that intersection. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Fowler. And before we continue, I'll let the record show that Councilmember Cuddeback arrived at 7:22 during Mr. Feilberg's presentation. Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you, Mayor. Brad, I'm just curious about the line of sight issues that we heard about tonight. Some bushes, whatever.
Well, there are bushes between the sidewalks and the street. And the cars are parked far enough away for the requirement for any crosswalk, which is 20 feet from the intersection. Actually, they are 30 feet. Mm-hmm. As using due caution as a pedestrian, you would step out into the street, you know, when you're still in front of the parked cars and look to see if anyone was coming. If there is someone who's coming, you would not continue until they stop. If the street's clear, then you can cross.
Okay, what about marked crosswalks?
There are not marked crosswalks. There are crosswalks there. At every intersection, there are crosswalks. Studies show that marked crosswalks do not really improve pedestrian safety. In fact, there are some studies that show that marked crosswalks give the pedestrians a false sense of security because they think there's these nice white lines down there. A car will stop if I step out in front of them. So actually, they aren't as cautious when crossing the street. Most of the recent studies have said that it doesn't make any difference whether they're marked or unmarked if there's less than five lanes of traffic.
So did the volumes of traffic change with the addition or the modifications on Main Street?
Removing the stop sign, they went up probably, the peak hour went up by probably about 50 cars. We had we don't have long periods of data, we just did a snapshot. So from December, the traffic on Fremont is a little bit higher than it was in December this last week.
Okay, that's all I've got. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I'm sorry, Councilmember Gamble had pushed his light first, and when I looked down, both were on. Councilmember Gamble.
She made a statement, Brad, less than 25 miles an hour. So that was one of my questions. When you had the counters out, were you also measuring speed?
Yes.
Correct. Okay, so it was just for that snapshot. And remind me, what's the speed limit there? Is
25, yes.
25 miles an hour. Okay. Let's see. Per hour is traffic counts. I guess the statement about it, your last statement around, state law. we've had them there since the 90s. We're not that concerned. We feel that it is in the best interest. Otherwise, we would have addressed this probably 20, 30 years ago, or 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
There is, as they say, there's warrants and then there's a political warrant. So...
Well, I'm not talking
direction.
I'm not talking political. I'm talking about the citizens that are affected, right? Because
right.
I mean, I drive that way quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
And I know people that live down Blakely Street, and they approach me as soon as they came out. I mean, I think the citizen that was here, Mr. Martin, said it perfectly. I totally got it when we were doing the downtown. At first, when I first moved here, it used to tick me off because there was a stop sign there because I was trying to cut over to 203. And then I started realizing, oh, it's probably a good thing that there's a stop sign there because I'm trying to get to 203, and there is an intersection there. So what is the cost associated with the stop signs that were there that we took down if we were to put them back up?
A couple hundred dollars.
And if I read correctly, one of the reasons we cited is that there hasn't been any accidents there since the 90s, correct? What's the accident count?
The accident rate, there's not records back to the 1990s, but there were very few accidents at that intersection.
So having the stop signs, you could argue the other way, that having the stop signs there actually worked. There was no accidents while the stop signs were there, but we don't have any records before that time.
Right. We only keep records in mouth for about 3 years.
Okay. No, I didn't know that, so I appreciate it. So then the last 3 years, there really hasn't been anything. So a couple hundred dollars to put the signs back up. That includes the striping as well, because I mean, when you look at the old photographs, there used to be a stripe.
It's
$1,000.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess the other the piece that I've been concerned about too is because I think some are also used to that stop sign being there. I mean, let's see, how long has it been out since June?
June 20th, I think it was.
June 20th. I know that's. okay, since June, so $1,000 to put them back in. We all have got the statistics that. Okay, that it doesn't meet the 300 cars per hour, the 150 cars per hour. My concern is even though it's not, meeting that, I know what I see and I know what my initial inclination was, and having lived here the amount of time I have, I'm going to skip through here to get to, where I'm going, and I am concerned about, we had a stop sign there. There was a good reason why we had it there, and then we took it out. And if it's $1,000 to put it back in, which doesn't seem like a lot, we didn't have any accidents while they were there. Every citizen that's approached me, the ones that have been here tonight, feel that it's warranted. I fully would entertain putting them back in because that's what was there previously. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Just a quick clarification question. Did you say, I'm sorry, what was the speed limit when we took the snapshot, the average speed limit of cars?
Well, the speed limit was 25. The 85th percentile of vehicle speeds is less than 25 miles an hour, except for people going southbound on Blakely Street, which was 32.
Okay. So 85% of the people were going less than 25
miles an hour. Yes.
Okay.
Would you yield for
sure?
The data that we took, was that just during the time when it was out?
Yeah, just when the traffic counters were out.
So we don't know what it was when it was there, so if it was even less than 25.
I would assume it was because they had a stop.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know, it just seems hard. It's hard for me to believe you got all the way up to 25 miles an hour in that short. I guess I would want to know where the counters were. Where did we have them?
The west leg was by Main Street. The east leg was just this side of the alley, and then halfway basically between Main and Blakely, and about three car lengths south of Fremont and South Blakely.
Three car lengths south, and it was over 35 miles an hour? I guess I don't understand that. Chief, help me out. We shake your hands.
32.
32. Three car lengths south, yeah.
That was probably you and me were heard getting the...
You're going from a complete stop. I mean, you got to go from a complete stop.
No, there's no stop.
North-south?
Yeah, north-south. Southbound people, they weren't stopping.
Got it.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I got it. Okay, now I'm clear.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Councilmember Cutback? Oh, I'm sorry. Councilmember Hanford, you saw the report.
So I would agree with what Councilmember Gamble said. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Cutback?
Fred, did we have any complaints when the stop sign was there? Like members? When it was there?
We had no complaints. When it was initially put in, probably, but not recently.
And it seemed to be working to have the stop sign there. I mean, we didn't have a lot of accidents. We didn't have any complaints from the community that, hey, get rid of this stop sign. It's slowing down traffic.
No, part of the most important thing about the manual uniform traffic control devices, by the word uniform there, is because you're supposed to treat similar intersections similarly.
Sure.
So low volume residential streets is that, you know, That's the problem with varying from the standard is that when things happen, someone will look at something else and say, you did it over at that intersection, why didn't you do it at this intersection?
But that stop sign had been there for a while. Mm-hmm. Like there was a history of it being there. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to me that sometimes, and I said this before, that we wait until collisions happen before we do something. And that's part of the criteria that is to look and say, how many collisions there were instead of looking and trying to be preventative and maybe do something before collisions happen. The other thing is, the way that I read the RCW is to be followed as far as practicable. So, I mean, that gives us a little bit of leeway to, you know, keep the stop sign in there. Would you agree?
No.
No?
No. It is practical to follow that.
Right, but no. So, but it's followed as far as.
Yeah, and so it's practical to put one in there.
But that seems...
I mean, not put one in there.
That it's not say you shall follow this.
As far as practical.
But it doesn't say you shall follow. So that tells me that we have a little bit of leeway. That's it.
Councilmember Kemp?
I'm going to yield to Councilmember Gamble since I took this up.
No, I was just going to comment on the. Is it fair to say your definition of practical, or is there a definition of practical that is spelled out?
There's no definition of practical.
Okay, so what is your definition of practical?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
I'll go.
Anything further, Councilmember Gamble?
No, that's all good.
Okay. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. So if I've got this straight, we've got about 150 cars on an hourly basis going through that particular intersection, 203, right?
No, both ways.
Both ways,
yeah.
Okay. So it's an average. We could have 125 going one direction and
it's
25.
More going east than going west.
Okay, that would be my assumption as well. So the impact, and that's probably... Has it increased with the development we had in Main Street?
Well, I don't know. It's increased since the stop signs were removed.
Okay. But I can't picture if it's... What I'm getting at is there a significant increase in the traffic flow at this time? That's a question I'm not quite sure about. And also, if... Are we expecting a significant increase in that particular street? In the future? Is it going to become a major thoroughfare for people bypassing Main Street
because of parking restrictions and traffic and pedestrians. So do we need to look at this a little bit deeper in terms of what we expect to happen in the next 5 years? Would we expect to put in a traffic light because we expect all of traffic, all Main Street traffic, now be diverted to 203?
When the downtown master plan study was done, mm-hmm. it was anticipated that that would be a third, Main Street to get to 203 and across 203 to the outdoor of the neighborhood of the downtown plan.
Okay. With the possibility of a light on 203. Do we have a light? We don't have a light.
No.
Okay. I can understand the issue about putting the stop sign, and at first glance I'd agree, but I am concerned about the future of traffic on that particular street, whether or not that will cause us to have a problem in the future. So in terms of short term, I think a stop sign would be fine, but I don't know if we have any plans for larger traffic studies and what the impact will be there, and whether or not putting a stop sign will have an impact on that. So that's for me. Good.
We yield for comment.
Oh, yes, member. Councilmember. Councilmember Gamble, you have the floor.
If
you,
sure, sir.
No, I just. I hear what you're saying. I guess the piece that I keep going back to is if it truly is only $1,000, because I don't see anything on the long term streets plan that we have in place. I mean, to me, that's a pittance overall, budget, when we don't even have anything on the long term plan. I agree with you from the standpoint of we should be thinking long term, because I think we did have some stuff going down.
That's what I was wondering.
Fremont, and even when we talked about parking and that sort of thing, but and then resurfacing of Fremont, but
right.
It just doesn't seem like a lot of money for something that's been in place for 25 years.
Will you yield?
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the other items is I think we considered Fremont as being a one-way directional for downtown traffic. This is far into the future. I think we discussed something similar.
There was a discussion about a couplet.
Right.
Where Fremont and then Hill Street going the other direction.
So again, I'm getting back to the short term. I don't see a problem with the stop sign. I agree with, if we have a leeway to do it, it doesn't sound like it has a significant impact. With the caveat that it looks like we're going to be doing some significant research on this in the future. And like you said, $1,000 put in a stop sign and have some crosswalks put there. I don't care. I like the security of it.
Crosswalks are $2,000 a piece.
Are they really?
Yes.
Okay, so it goes up a little bit more, but I like the false security of having a crosswalk there when I'm crossing the street. Anyway, that's all I've got. Thank you.
Okay, Council, is there a motion to request that the stop signs be put back? Councilmember Gamble?
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion about reinstalling the stop signs? Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes 5-0. Thank you. All right, the next item on the agenda is one I think I'm going to be handing the gavel over. Yes. All right. Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Hanford, I'm going to bring you the gavel. So I ask that the city clerk note my recusal in the official minutes for the meeting for this item. The reason for my recusal is that I am employed by the contracting party, Snohomish County. And my position with the county is that of an employee, and my compensation consists entirely of a fixed salary. There is no contingent component of my compensation package, person RCW 4223040, and based upon consultation with the city attorney, I accordingly have at most a remote interest in the agreement and am removing myself from chambers.
He needs to record that.
All right, let the record show that the mayor has left the chambers. We'll move on to agenda bill number 15-174, the approval of right-of-way purchase for 179th Street sidewalk project, authorizing the mayor pro tem to sign associated documents thereto. Brad, this is you.
Yes. As you recall, we got a grant from the Community Development block grant from Snohomish County to install sidewalks on the west side of 179th going north for a couple blocks from Main Street. There's two pieces of property that along the way hadn't donated or dedicated enough right-of-way to install that to the full 60-foot right-of-way, so we need to get property for those two, which are on your agenda bill. The six properties north of Main Street on the west side of 179th. And that's one of the first steps we need to do in the project so we can get that sidewalk installed next year. One correction needs to be done is the amount not to exceed is $30,000, not $26,200. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Council, I don't have the lights in front of me, so if you could raise your hand, that'd be great. Councilor Gamble?
I'll make a motion to authorize the city to acquire the necessary right-of-way from the property listed above in an amount not to exceed $30,000, and authorize the mayor pro tem to sign the associated documents thereto and expressly authorize for the minor revisions deemed necessary and appropriate.
Second.
Let the record show that Councilor Gamble made the motion. It was seconded by Councilmember Camp. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Let's record show the council member Mayor Thomas back in the chambers.
Thank you. The next item we have on the agenda this evening is under new business. This is AB 1515176, Discussion East Monroe Project Update. Timeline, Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, with a deadline of December 1 to complete the East Monroe Growth Management Hearings Board, just want to lay out the schedule, the review schedule that we have for this right now. And it pretty much means that between now and December 1, the Planning Commission and the City Council are going to have some type of work or action or meeting just about every week between now and then. Excuse me, because I'm battling a cold. But last night, as I mentioned, the Planning Commission held a public hearing on the comprehensive plan amendment and rezoning. It lasted over 3 hours. Planning Commission will deliberate and discuss this next week at next meeting on the 19th, and expect them to take action on the 26th. On the 27th of this month, we plan to have a briefing for the City Council on the draft supplemental EIS. And you've canceled your November 3rd meeting, and November 10th, we're planning to have first reading for the City Council, and the 17th would be second reading, with a meeting on the 24th, if necessary, if the timeline falls behind for any reason. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Council, any questions? Okay. Councilmember.
Just so I understand the timeline, so we are going to be voting on, or we're going to be doing the first reading of the ordinance. When does the Growth Management Board get back to us on?
I believe that we have to report December 16th.
Okay.
So we need to complete the process by the 1st, and it's either a meeting or a telephone meeting with the Growth Management Hearing Board to argue whether or not we've complied one way or the other.
Okay. So if City Council votes on the 10th or the adopts the ordinance on the 17th, and then the Growth Management Board comes back with we didn't comply, what would be then the next step?
And I'm not sure what the answer to that question
okay.
is.
I guess that's what I'm thinking about, the process. Do we wait to vote on the ordinance after we get the ruling back from Growth Management Board that we complied, or this is
no,
we
want,
have to do
complete,
this process?
You want to complete the process by December 1st.
Okay, and then we wait and see what they say.
Correct.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Saki.
Thank you.
Next item that we have on the agenda this evening is new business item number 3. This is AB 15177, authorize mayor to sign jail services contract with Sunnyside. Chief.
This is a proposal that's been agreed upon by both parties to formalize a contractual agreement between City Sunnyside Jail
and the City of Monroe Police Department. Specifically, the Sunnyside Jail will be assigned to provide inmate transportation and housing for any adult prisoner arrested by the City of Monroe Police Department to be determined agreeable to each party. The rate that we will be paying is that inmates will be staying less than 7 days. It'll be $60 a day. And if it's over 7 days, it'll be $42 a day. If it's $42 and less than 7 days, we would have to transport the individuals over to Sunnyside. If it's going to be 7 days or over, they would come and pick them up and also return.
Okay. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I move to authorize the mayor to sign the interlocal agreement with the City of Sunnyside for the housing of inmates and expressly authorize further minor revisions deemed necessary and appropriate.
Second. I have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Next item that we have on the agenda this morning is also under new business. This is new business item number 4, AB 15-180, presentation of the 2016 General Fund and Internal Service Funds budget. Ms. Nelson.
I need to turn this on. Oops, I need to turn it off. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I said good morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
We all knew.
You weren't going to see
me. It's okay, but we're not listening to
you. That works. Good evening.
Well, yeah, it's time to kick off another budget season. Seems like we did this just a year ago, right?
Maybe this morning. I don't know.
Yeah. Everyone's got a different time.
Just wanted to make sure that you knew it was 9.
I appreciate it.
Okay, I'm sorry. List. Remember that with camera. Okay. I'm going to talk to you tonight about the general fund, contingency fund, and the Internal Revenue Service funds. I'm going to start out with an overview of the budget as a whole for the general fund and the contingency fund, and then we'll drill down into department reports and updates. And I'm going to start with the revenues first and then go to the expenditures. We'll start off with the general fund. And the general fund, it's approximately $11 million. This is our operating fund. It covers all operations except the street maintenance operations and the utility operations. But all other services come out of the general fund. It's usually the main focus. It's what everyone looks at. And it's generally supported by tax dollars. This is the most discretionary use of money that you have. Money that comes from the utilities has to be spent on utilities. Money that comes into the capital funds have to be spent on capital projects. General fund, it's tax-supported dollars. There are a few restricted revenue streams, but like the police sales tax, that has to be spent on public safety. But generally, the property tax, you can spend it on anything you want. There's the general sales tax, you can spend it on anything you want. So there's the most discretion with the general fund, and it's pretty much why that's the most discussed part of the budget. For our 2015 budget. For the 2016 budget, the revenues are projected to be $11.7 million. Operating expenditures, $11.7. You'll notice the last three digits of the expenditures are actually less than the revenues, so it's a balanced budget. And one-time project expenditures are $155,000. That $155,000 for one-time projects, that includes transfer of $79,000 to the sick leave fund current reserve policy. We're still building that up to the city's total liability. And plus $75,000 transfer to the fleet fund from the police restricted. The police have a separate restricted fund balance, separate from the general fund balance. It's all in the general fund, but it's accounted for separately. And they're taking $75,000 of that and transferring it to the fleet fund to pay for some vehicles. And so the revenues are greater than the expenditures, and that was per the mayor's direction to staff, that he wanted a balanced budget. We were also directed to do a status quo budget. Staff was asked to keep things the same, and so no one was allowed to go crazy and think of new projects, new programs, unless they had a revenue funding source for it. This is the pie chart of where our revenues come from. As you can see, we're a sales tax city. Our three biggies are the property tax, utility tax, and sales tax. Sales tax is considered a volatile revenue stream from a business standpoint because it fluctuates greatly with the economy. Property tax is a very stable revenue stream because of foreclosure rights. It's considered guaranteed, you know, whatever's levied, you pretty much will collect 99% of whatever's levied because of foreclosure rights. Utility tax, that's also relatively steady.
Whoops. We didn't budget up for IT.
That was where we cut on the budget. Do I just say no?
Yeah, Ellison is.
And so utility tax is a tax we get on all other utilities, and it's based on their gross revenues. Electric, natural gas, water, and telephone. Those are the utilities we tax in cable. And but that's considered a franchise fee, but let's see. And so it's been just based on gross revenue. So as the city grows or as other utilities raise their rates, our tax increases because it's based on the gross revenues.
Councilmember Kim?
Thank you. Maybe I'm confused. So the utility tax doesn't have to be, isn't specifically designated for certain, it goes directly into our general. This type of utility tax.
This particular utility tax goes to the general fund, and
with no restrictions.
No restrictions.
Thank you.
And revenues that go into the utility funds, like the rates that we charge and the fees that we charge for utility services, that's restricted.
And that's water, sewer,
and storm.
And storm.
Garbage.
And this is cable.
No, it's a sales tax on the utility rates.
Right. It's like when you look at your utility bill, like your PUD bill, they charge you for electricity, and at the very bottom it says utility tax. And that's just a tax that's on that bill. And that portion is what I'm talking about.
Okay, thank you.
And then you can see our other revenue are not, they're equally important, but not as big as a portion of the pie. There's licenses, that's business licenses, building permits, and other taxes like gambling tax, leasehold excise tax, that's all 6%. And then charges for services, that includes like planning fees and fees that we charge for passport fees, some 9%. And then grand state shared revenue, that used to be a bigger piece of the pie, but ever since the recession, that there's less grant money and state shared money available. As you can see, fines and penalties, that's generally what we get from tickets, courts, and then miscellaneous. So, I'll talk now just about the three biggies. Property tax revenue for 2016, they're estimated to be $2 million. The preliminary budget does not include any automatic increase like the 1%, and as it turns out, the implicit price deflator is less than 1% this year, so you wouldn't, cities that do utilize the 1% increase can only do a 0.251 increase. So if your population's over 10,000, but we don't do it, so it's a moot point. And then the total levy is increasing by about 19,000, and that's because of new construction that has come on our tax rolls, so our total assessed value has increased. The next one is sales tax. Sales tax is estimated to be $5 million for next year, and it's broken down as follows. The first one, $368,000, that's the public safety portion of the sales tax that the voters voted in. $283,000 is what we get from the county. That is also restricted for public safety purposes. It's the way the state wrote the law, we get a portion of the county's sales tax. They have to give us a portion. And then the 4.3 is just our general sales tax that goes to general operations. And TBD, Traffic Benefit District sales tax levy that was enacted, revenues are, that's a whole different fund and it's restricted. So that's why it's not included in all this general fund talk here. But just as an aside, we're expecting it to be $865,000 in 2016. $700,000 will be transferred to the street CIP fund for projects. $22,000 will be spent on liability insurance and state auditor fees. So that's just an aside, since we're talking about sales tax, I wanted to bring that up, because I know people would ask, well, where does that fit in? And it's separate, because it is restricted. The utility tax revenue, we're estimating to be $2 million for next year. That's an increase of about 3% over this year. And most of that is, a little bit of that is due to growth and larger population, but mainly it's due to water, electric, and gas are all increasing their rates, and so we're going to get more tax because of that. The phone tax is starting to taper off, we're noticing a trend, and that's because of changing technology. A lot of people are getting rid of their landlines and going strictly cell, and a lot of people are going to digital versus cell, or I'm not really up on the technology, but I know with the new technology, we don't have legislation to tax it. We tax the old way, not the new way. So just changing times, we're slowly losing that in revenue stream.
Ma'am?
Yes.
And maybe it was just being, maybe it wasn't precise language, but you said we build the old way and not the new way. Is there a new way?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
We build the old technology.
Right.
We there is no legislation that allows us to build a new technology.
You're building landlines, correct?
Landlines, and we do build cell, but when people do the voice internet protocol.
Right. Yes.
We can't tax that.
Right. Your old standard landline telephone is under the PUC, the Public Utility Commission. It's all taxed by the state, overseen by the state. Anything that is, you know, VoIP, that's all not.
Right.
The local city's government and the state governments don't have that. So.
Yeah.
The bigger the decrease in landlines, the less that the governments will get from that.
Yeah.
The other thing that was interesting that we talked a little bit about on staff, I know this is a very granular thing, but it's something of interest, is that as a lot of us are moving to different types of cell phone plans and some of us are buying our phones outright and things like that, we don't get our cell phone bills anymore, where the cost is going to be higher because you're paying the price of the phone over time. So the cell phone bills are getting cheaper per month, which means that the percent that you're making on the utility tax is lower for the local government. So that's something else that was interesting that came up, that those revenues are declining because of changes not only in technology but also in the cost of that technology.
Yeah, the cost of a cell phone is less. So, our when 10 keys were calculators were brand new, they were expensive, and now people give them away. Other revenues are planning and building fees. And I don't know how many of you work with construction, but trying to guess when a developer is going to come in the door with their projects is kind of hard. We know what they're working on, but when they're actually going to walk in the door is kind of an art form. For building permit fees, you can see 2015, we budgeted $200,000, $199,000, but what actually walked in the door, $300,000 we're expecting to have by the end of the year. So that's a nice increase. I mean, that's a nice problem to have. We're guessing that 2016 is going to be about $300,000. Planning and zoning fees, there again, we budgeted $25,000. It's looking like we're going to end up with $96,000. And then the estimate for 2016 is $50,000. Same with building plan check fees. That one's coming in right at round budget. And it's going to increase in 2016 to 180. So those are those revenues. They're significant revenues. They're not as big as the big three, but they're significant. Next are the expenditures for the general fund. The biggest piece of the pie, as you can see, is public safety at 61%. That's including our costs for jail and dispatch and prosecuting attorney as well in that public safety. That's all considered part of public safety. After that, you see parks is about 10%. Planning, permitting, and building, or community development, I guess I should be labeling it, is about 9%. Miscellaneous is emergency management and interfund transfers and projects. Then there's finance at 4%, court at 3%, elected officials, HR, legal, those are all small. Administration and city clerk, that covers public records requests as well, at 6%. So, pretty much the same as last year's.
Diane, yeah. And at one point in time, we used to have a street fund as part of that pie. Is that correct?
No.
No. Okay.
Years ago, before my time, the street fund always has to be a separate fund due to the way the state legislature wrote the fuel tax. They say you call it out as a separate fund. Years ago, the city did divert a portion of property taxes to the street fund, and maybe that's what you're thinking of. Historically, and for most cities, if you look, the fuel tax funds some of a street fund, but a lot of cities, the general fund supports the street fund. So, technically, in the big picture, yeah, but philosophically, you would say the street fund is funded by the general fund.
Okay. Thank you.
We have not, as of late, but I can see that coming up in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, and I just wanted to throw out, too, miscellaneous, that 2%, that includes the emergency management. And for 2016, this is one place that is a change. For 2016, emergency management in the general fund is only $29,000. Historically, the general fund has fully supported emergency management at 100%, but when we were trying to balance the budget and we were re-looking at everything and, you know, seeing the function of everything, it was decided that emergency management covers utilities as well. Part of our emergency management activities includes, in the event of a catastrophic event, supplying water and making sure sewage doesn't run into the streets, and the utility portion and storm flooding and things like that. That's all part of emergency management and a focus of it. So for 2016, we decided to change the philosophy so that the three utilities and the general fund, all four funds, will share the burden of emergency management. And because it's a more accurate reflection of what the activities actually are. Some items of note regarding the general fund budget is $15,000 is going to the Senior Center Transportation Program, which is the same amount as last year. It was funded at $9,000 a year from the years 2008 to 2013. We were doing $9,000 a year. And then in 2014, we bumped it up, and now it's at $15,000. Again, the $79,000 transferred with sick leave reserve per reserve policy. We're sticking to the plan there. It's a formula. It says it's a percentage. I think 10%, 1% that we have to put over each year until we meet our full liability. And then a thing I want to point out is that operating revenues are increasing 5% and operating expenditures are increasing 8%. Still balanced, but we're going to have some future discussions in 2016 about these trends of the expenditures coming up kind of fast, and we want to keep pace, especially as the city grows, as we're poised for growth. So I just wanted to point that out so it's a heads up of what's coming up in the future. As far as personnel goes, per contract obligations, the 2016 budget, there's a 1.6% cost of living increase for Teamsters, 3.24 for the Police Guild, and Teamsters is based on CPI indicators, indexes, and police is based on a formula of sales tax increases. And while it looks like a big disparage between the two percentages there, there were years during the recession when the police got zero COLA and Teamsters still got a COLA. So in the large picture, it all balances out. It's just because they're based on two different things, it's uneven in a single year. For non-reps, there's a 1.6 market adjustment, and then there's also the 5% merit allowance. Now, that's a merit allowance. That does not mean that that's necessarily going to be spent. In fact, I'm pretty sure the entire 5% will not be spent, because I don't think that everyone is perfect all the time. So, and it's not my call, but I'm guessing. L&I has...
Bruce Dow's
district. I'm getting darts, aren't I? L&I in premiums are going up 10%, 7% increase for Teamsters medical insurance, and that the non-reps are also represented by their insurance plan, and then 5% for dental for the Teamsters union owner. This is a graph to show you the last 10 years of our employment, how many FTEs we have, full-time employee equivalents. And this is just to illustrate, we're a service industry, so the number of FTEs we have is real key to the deliverables that we can give to the citizens. If we have, you know, if you have no people, you can't give any services. We are basically a service industry. So as you can see, the first top two, see that top line? That's the whole city as a whole. This one here is the general fund only. So you can see 2006, city's going along in growth mode. Then we hit that nice boom, you know, 2007, 2008, the gravy years where things are really going forward and we're like feeling real good about the future. And then wham, the recession. That's pretty apparent there. You can see a big slide when we started laying off everybody. And now we're trying, and then we hit bottom. Now we're trying to slowly rebuild. But I think it's pretty interesting to see that 10 years later, we're still not where we were back in 2006. We're still trying to get back. And in the meantime, the city has grown. So there's a bigger demand on services. And yet we're still trying to get back to where we were. So I just, you know, I'm not trying to be doom and gloom, but I just want you to be aware of this situation, that it is still tight for us, and we're still not providing all the services we would like to provide. We're still not at a level that we would like to be or that we were at in the past. So, any fund balance? We're all going to end up at the end of the year. The undesignated fund balance, we're showing at $126,000. From a finance standpoint or a business standpoint, I personally would like to see that at $200,000, because I think if you have it around 2% of your operating expenditures, that's a nice little cushion to have for any fluctuations or for anything that doesn't, because the budget is an estimate, and things don't always go according to estimates. So that's basically your makeup for any revenue that doesn't come in or any expense that might go over that 126 is. So I kind of like it at 200, but you know, like I said, we're still working a little bit tight, so it's not exactly 200,000, but it's better than nothing.
And Diane, what was our ending undesignated ending fund balance for 2015 in the adopted budget?
About $70,000.
$70,000.
Worse. Yeah, this is an improvement. The restricted for emergencies per the reserve policy is $2 million. That's 17% of our operating expenditures is what we're required to hold out for emergencies, and we are able to do it. The restricted from public safety is $200,000 at the end of 2016, and that's a combination of leftover sales tax money for public safety purposes, and that has not been spent yet, and photo enforcement money that has not been spent yet. That's dedicated to public safety purposes. So the total lending fund balance is $2.3 million, which is conservative, and it's stable. It's a good place to be. It's not too much, it's not too little. The contingency fund, do you guys have this tonight or not? It's no big deal if you don't.
Yep.
But if you look at page 11, that's where the contingency fund is. And it's on the second half of the page, the bottom half of the page. And what we're expecting is that the year will end up with a fund balance of $438,000. There's three things proposed in the contingency fund. One is a downtown arts and events mini grant investment program for $15,000, downtown Main Street program $25,000, and lobbying services for $32,000. Did you want to speak about any of these? Or?
Yeah, everybody knows about the lobbying services. We've discussed that before. The downtown Main Street program, we talked about that earlier this year. That's to help with professional services, so consulting to help the Main Street program become viable and sustainable into 2017. And then the downtown arts and events mini grant investment program, when I was meeting with the chamber board, one of the things they talked about was every time they close the street, like in downtown, to do something, it, you know, they put out anywhere from a few hundred to $1,000 to close the streets down. That's paying our staff to go out and shut down the streets. And I understand why we do that and why we can't have volunteers do that, but it caused me to ask some questions around, and I learned that a couple other jurisdictions have these mini grant programs where a downtown, in this sort of situation, we need to, you know, I'd need to come up with some details with the staff, but the idea being that you would limit maybe $8,000 of that $15,000 to being a match to a downtown organization that wanted to do something to promote the downtown, so they come forward with labor and money. We can then kick in up to $1,000 up to eight times over the course of 2016. And then we also have had some people express some interest in doing art in the downtown, and as you know, we've applied for a grant from TPA. Was it Tourism Promotion Area? Or
Snohomish County REIT.
Oh, from Snohomish County REIT for art in the downtown. And so this would be an opportunity that, like, if the Monroe Arts Council or somebody came forward and wanted to do a couple of art pieces, like in the bulb outs in downtown, that they could come in and apply for matching dollars, and, you know, it would be something we'd bring in to council because it would go in the right of way and make certain that that's something that council would be willing to do. So that's the idea of the mini grant program, is some funding available both for events and also for some durable art and interest in the downtown. Anybody have any questions? Yeah, Councilmember Cutter.
So the downtown and the mini art program makes sense for me coming out of the contingency fund. Mm-hmm. We talked about the downtown plan being maybe a two-year plan. Feed the money and get them started to find their own funding. The lobbyists, though, if that's something we're looking at doing annually, we might want to look at how that can fit into the general fund budget versus a one-time.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Councilmember Gamble.
No, I would agree with that comment. And then the other question I have, so on the
offers on the mini grant.
I like
the concept and the idea of that. So when you say you bring, so the grant, as far as the process that would go through, is it, does it go to the city, or so we budget it, and then the city staff would make a determination on would it be Gene, would it be the department heads, as far as selection, I guess?
Yeah, so for the $8,000 for the events, that would be something that we would handle on an administrative level, but for the art, because this would be in the right-of-way, this would be something we'd bring forward to council.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, so, and that's why we sort of limit it to about $1,000 per incident for the events, and again, that's matching. So if you've got a smaller event, you know, you're putting out $500 for something, we're not going to match you with $1,000. But yeah, the artwork, because it would be more permanent, as those opportunities come forward, we'd bring them to council, because it will be in the right of way, and I want you all to like what's going in the right of way in the downtown.
Yeah. Right, and the concept is just, again, to go to Councilmember Kobeck's comment. The reason why we would be doing this out of the contingency fund is because of our concerted effort within this next the 2 year time. Okay,
yeah, it. Yeah, and I feel the same way. The lobbying services we've kind of put in the contingency because this is sort of a pilot. I mean, we haven't done this before. Arguably, it was one of those things that I also could have put into operating. But as you saw, we were at $123,000 or so on the undesignated ending fund balance, and that, believe it or not, as I'm working through this stuff, that number will start at a couple $100,000. Actually, that number will usually start negative.
Yeah.
I mean, just to be real frank,
yeah.
That number starts negative, and then I'm working very closely with staff, and staff is, you know, whittling things down to get that zero, and then to take it as positive as we can. And last year, as an example, we ended up at $70,000 over the course of the time that I presented to you, to the time you adopted. There were things that kept coming forward that reduced the undesignated ending fund balance. So for me, putting it in the contingency fund provides us with that flexibility on the $120,000 that if things eat away during the rest of this year, the flip side is sales tax could increase, we'll have more rolling into next year. So anyway, it's, you know, it's up to council. It's policy and budget, and if you'd like us to put it so that it's not in the contingency, we can certainly do that. It just means your ending fund balance is going to reduce a little bit more.
I tend to agree with Councilmember Cutterback. And when we've talked about it and discussed it, we all realize that, especially when we start talking 522 US2,
yeah,
those are long term. You know, hopefully short-term, but I think we all realize that, you know, they're long-term things that we're going to have to continually be in front of the legislator, the legislation, so I would prefer to have it in there.
Okay, so
moving it into the general fund does make your expenditures more than your revenues. You've got fund balance to cover it,
right,
but just from a business standpoint.
For right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, next we have department updates. Each department will talk a little bit about what they've done this year, what they're planning to do, their work plan for next year. And Liz McCann go first, because she's the nicest one.
Good evening. Judge Rosano was unable to be here tonight, so yeah, me again. She prepared this tonight. It looks like we're just going into our second year pretty strong, pretty much what we expected. We're going to implement some programs that will open up the court services without people having to come into the court. We do an online, we have a designated email address so people can correspond with us. We've started to do hearings by mail if it's an infraction, where they can send in, they ask for a court date, we send a statement form back, they submit that, and then she makes a ruling on paper and we mail it back, so there's no actual appearance to be here. That's helped a lot with the amount of people that have to come here and be heard, yet they still get their case heard by the judge. In 2015, we stuck with our calendar, we're doing this in the one day, we haven't had to add any additional time for now. We'll look at that again as we get into the second half of 2016, so we're not going out of our salaries at all, we're not having to call in extra security and anything like that, more judge time. I'm looking forward to next year. We're just always trying to find ways to be more efficient and effective. We try to do as much paperless as we can. Anything that she can view and we can view online and accept online, we do that with the state program, so we're not printing paperwork to look at. She can look at all the state records on the computer that we put in here for things like that.
We're going to try to use some alternative sentencing programs, which is part of the sunny side. We're in that with the police department, trying to figure out ways to be more cost effective with the jail sentences that are being given out by the court. Should we look at electronic monitoring? We look at alcohol monitoring, things like that. That will keep them out of custody, cost effective. And then just to help things run smoothly and maybe free of our time as caseload increases, we don't get more staff, so we have to find more efficient ways. We're going to go into the website and maybe make some hyperlinks where people can find information for themselves instead of tying up our phones and our time. And then they can go look at public records. And we're trying to look at people make online payments, pretty much like they do with the utilities. Mm-hmm. It has to be a separate program so that we really let people have another option for mailing us or coming in. But other than that, I think it's status quo from last year, and we'll just continue to carry on. Any questions?
Thank you.
Next is HR. Ben's not here, so.
That's me.
Oh, okay.
Okay. In 2015, the Charter Department continued to monitor the changes and the effects of the Affordable Care Act and how that was going to affect the city. They have been exploring the electronic timekeeping system. Currently, it's all done by pen and paper. It's pretty labor intensive, so we want to switch to an automated system on that. And the same with the applicant tracking. This year, we've done a lot of hiring and refilling of positions, and that is a laborious effort to do that. We would like to have that all electronic, and we've been working on that. Currently, we have made to the final phase of vendor selection on the timekeeping, and we're working with Civic Plus to put the applicant tracking system into place. You might recognize Civic Plus, we have already utilized their service. In 2016, we'll fully implement the applicant tracking system. In the first quarter of 2016, we'll implement the electronic timekeeping system, and then in the fourth quarter, it's bargaining time for all the Teamsters groups, and that is Public Works and Parks, Sergeants, and Office Clerk. Any questions?
Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. What are you currently using for timekeeping?
Basically, it's an Excel spreadsheet, and each person fills out an Excel spreadsheet of when they're off
their hours,
and that gets turned in, and somebody else looks at it and fills in the master spreadsheet.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Kedebeck.
So the changes to the Affordable Care Act, I would imagine that hasn't really affected the city much with, in the past, with full-time employees and being union.
There's some truth to that, but it also affects the cost of service, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we keep continuing to monitor, and then the Cadillac program as well, to make sure that if what we have is considered Cadillac, which I believe it is, it could affect us at that standpoint.
Oh, I thought we had talked about that maybe a couple years ago, 2 years ago, about not having that program, and so we currently still have that Cadillac program.
Well, it could be considered, so.
Okay. And then electronic timekeeping system, going to that is there. My company just did that last year, and we have the Excel spreadsheet, so just be prepared for, you know, the training and the, you think it's going to be easier, and then it becomes more work before it gets easier, I guess, I should say. But, okay, thank you.
We're also hoping to incorporate some job costing in tracking and electronic timekeeping too. So since labor is such a big part of our budget, we want it to be more active in how we distribute people's time.
Yeah.
So that'll be something that little baby steps.
Yeah.
Next is community development.
Mr. Mayor, council members,
I think I got my voice back, but I'm not sure how long it's going to last. I'm going to talk really quick. Community Development Department. So when I talk to individuals about Community Development Department, I just like to have you think about it in four buckets. Bucket one is like planning activities. Planning would be permit processing of plats, variances, conditional use permits, and it also means amendments to the codes, like signed codes and zoning code. Bucket two, building. We have building staff that does plan review and building inspections. Bucket three is code enforcement. Community development will follow up on code enforcement complaints on building and zoning issues, but we do not have a dedicated code enforcement officer, so that requirement, not requirement, but that function gets spread out across the department. And bucket four is what I call community building, and it's different other things that the department does for community outreach or even economic development. And you saw earlier the fee structures and the fees and revenue coming in this year is much higher in the building fees and zoning fees. So when that happens, you have these buckets and certain things begin to shift in terms of where our workload goes. From a planning standpoint, planning permits, under state law, we have to process those within certain time periods, so we have to get those done. Building permits, they come in the door, we have to get those done and comply with state law, state review, state building codes for building permits. Code enforcement, it's one of those things that doesn't necessarily have to be done, but certainly when there's a life safety issue, we're out there enforcing the codes. Some of the other items that may not be as a life safety type issue, we get to them when we can. And then certainly that fourth bucket, community building is important, and we try to get to that when we can. So in terms of the Community Development Department 2015 comprehensive plan update, something we have to do by state law. East Monroe Hearings Board directive, we have to do that by virtue of what the hearing court is asking for. Permit processing, again, land use permits, high level of activity in 2015, building permits, similarly a high level of activity in 2015. A lot of our staff resources went into that bucket. There were some code amendments, marijuana code amendment that was done before I got here, and certainly code enforcement's ongoing. So 2016, assuming this department's fully staffed during the whole course of 2016, permit processing, we need to keep doing that. We need to keep processing building permits and land use permits. Comprehensive plan implementation, the comprehensive plan that's being hopefully adopted this year, sets out some things that need to be done. So zoning map changes that need to be done during the course of 2016, and some amendments to the zoning code and critical areas ordinance. Permit processing, customer service improvements. So what I mean by that is, it's not just permit processing, but we need to get into our codes, look at our procedures, look at streamlining, and look at internal and external coordination, how we process permits. And I can tell you just from being here, there are quite a few items that I want to try to get at in terms of the code. Maybe some items that just don't need to be there anymore that help us process our permits much more efficiently. And that also means reaching out to our customers and talking to them about what some of their priorities and needs are as well. In economic development and downtown revitalization, I put into that fourth bucket, which is community building. There's some opportunities here for marketing our permitting, marketing the community, using the website, beginning to have brochures and begin to outreach with different organizations that do economic development within the region and county, and coordinate with them as well. And then finally, code enforcement, which is ongoing. We just get to that when we can. We prioritize that as we can as well.
Councilmembers, any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Some of the police department's many accomplishments for 2015. We have two officers graduating from the basic law enforcement academy. We also, in fact, yesterday was the first day for a lateral officer. They were hired on the 12th of October. And by hiring a lateral officer rather than a brand new to law enforcement person, the city saved approximately $100,000 through the first year of the person working for the city. We did a remodel of the patrol bay area. We marked the work areas for the officers and where to process their evidence. And we also completed the New World training, and the department is ready for a very, very significant technology change, and it is to go live October 27th this year. For 2016, our challenges that we expect to have is, first of all, we will have implemented the New World CAD and reporting system. And we also will be going to a new crime mapping system, which offers the city the ability to do crime analysis from the crime mapping that we see on the internet. We also are going to launch, right at the first of the year, a new program for our Department of Policies. It's called Lexipol. It's by a company out of California. The biggest benefit of this is that this company monitors all law changes, whether it's state laws that have changed or case laws, federal case laws, and then notifies us of the best practices where these law changes may pertain to some of the policies we have and keeps us updated. They also will provide us training, weekly training over the internet on high liability policies, and officers will be required to take this training weekly and should benefit the department greatly in that manner.
Okay. Any questions?
Parks, I think, is the last one. Last but not least.
Good evening. So, Parks and Rec, what we have up here is highlights of some 2015 accomplishments. First bullet there is what we do, the 240 acres of parks, the 10 miles of trails. We support and host. Support and or hosted over 80 special events, 600,000 plus in attendance, bringing in $26.8 million in area economic impact. Volunteer programs, 2,000 plus service hours. We've been really growing that each year, and we're really proud of that, and we really like that ability to work with both groups and individuals. In these new projects, and donation side at $12,000. Park plan has been updated and almost ready to be adopted, and the skate park renovation has been designed and a grant has been awarded. We've resurfaced the athletic courts at Lake Tai Park and at Boyle Street Park, repaired 500 linear feet of trails, we have new ball field dugout covers constructed, new infield mix and all the infields, surfacing, safety netting, recycling bins grant was awarded. That's over at Lake Tai and Skyward Park, and I think we even have a bin outside the building here. So the new for 2016 is to construct the skate park improvements at Lake Tai Park. We're going to be going out to advertise for construction bids in the new year, and we want to get construction started by March because we're dealing with weather. So that's the time schedule for that. And it's expected to take conservatively about 4 months, so we hope by the end of spring to have it completed. There's also the realignment of the entry to Fairfield Park will occur in 2016, and that is in partnership with Snohomish County Parks. So it'd be a good thing for traffic access in and out of that park. The master planning of the Kevin Pitt site will commence in 2016. We moved that to 2016. We just didn't have the time to get started on that in 2015. So, and then last that we have here new for 2016 is design upgrades to the building at Lake Tai Park, and that's to meet event venue facility demands. And this is talking about, I know I've mentioned this before, the west-facing side of the building. You know, as you, I know you've all been at special events out at the park, that side of the building acts as a central location for whether it's the event organizer, performing arts, movies, that sort of thing, and some enhancements that can be done to that side of the building really go well with the experience for visitors and residents here in Monroe. And also part of that project will be to also reorient and enhance the north side of the building for the concessions to really point it where it should be pointed, towards the lake. And and another thing too is at the base of that, down by the field there, it's a wet area there, and the drainage is poor, so we would be improving the drainage there as well. So just want to add, just to finish a couple points here, is that we obviously will continue to work with community partners, event organizers, and park user groups, and in a new group, the Downtown Monroe Merchants Association. Just met with them this afternoon. And I know there's some cool things that the Parks and Recreation Department can help them with you know, helping to beautify downtown and make it a more enjoyable experience for people. That goes along with all the improvements that we've done this year. And the last thing I want to say is that we've replaced this past year, replaced two employees, and so there's a focus in employee development and training of these two employees, because we have eight people total, including myself in the department, and so two individuals, two new people. That's a big percentage of our organization as far as our human resources, and so it's very critical that we get them on board, because we have the luxury, even though our staffing level went from about 12 people to 8 people from 2006, like I was on the earlier slide. We had experienced people in our department, so we were able to do things differently, and really rely on a lot of that experience. So that's a critical thing that we'll be working on this year.
That's it. So our esteemed attorney, Councilmember Hanford.
I just wanted to thank you. I had the privilege of taking a couple of my daughters down to the newly resurfaced athletic courts at Lake Tahoe to teach them pickleball.
Yeah.
And so it was a great experience. So.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we added those lines for pickleball. So.
Thank you very much.
Councilmember Gamble.
In the safety netting, that should say phase one, right?
Yeah, I didn't put on for 2016. There's an actual, we're going to do a little bit more of that. So
that's a bunch. Oh, that's great. So yeah. I appreciate all the work that you and your team of eight do. Yeah. There is a ton of stuff that is done that you're important.
Thank you.
Before Mike sits down, I just want to clarify: the Merchant Association is the Main Street program. It's the Downtown Monroe Association, I think.
Is that their name?
Okay. Yeah. So I just didn't want council to think there was another organization.
Downtown
in
Monroe.
Yeah. It's all good. Yeah, it's DMA, I think. Thank you.
So next is the Internal Service Funds, and this is comprised, there's three separate funds, the IT, Fleet and Equipment, and then Facilities Management. These are called Internal Service Funds because these funds, their function, each of them performs services for other departments within the city, that not to the public, as you know, like Parks, Police, they're all working with the public. These are working within to other departments within the city, and so the way they get their money is by charging fees to the other departments and funds. And so they're indirectly tax-based, which is why they're included here, but if they do work for the utilities, they charge the utilities. If they do work for general fund, they charge the general fund. So I just wanted you to be aware of how they are done. The first one is information technology, and Ben is in charge of this. Did he talk to you about it?
I can run through it the best I can.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, how about that? Okay, total expenses for IT fund is $507,034. We're going to continue the use of contracting network services. We work with IS Outsource right now, and they do all the behind-the-scenes technical stuff, maintain the servers, that type of thing. And then, of course, we've got Ken that is here on a daily basis to help test stuff. The restricted any fund balance per replacement schedule is $60,000. Any fund balance is $22,296. In 2015, we completed the internet redundancy for the CCC. That's out back where we do the emergency management work in the trailers. We're investigating a VPN. That's a remote user access. And we have completed upgrading the Windows server licensing and implemented third-party patch management.
in 2016. We'll be upgrading the servers and do a light release of the VPN.
Is there any questions?
Well, maybe it's a question for Ben, I guess. Light release, is that
we've heard certain departments, or we're selecting a few individuals
just to test it?
To test it and make sure it works and that we've got all the securities in place and that type of thing. I think Brad is going to be one of them, and Liz.
Light release, please.
That's what I was just explaining. So, light release, a few individuals.
No. What is light release?
That's just a term he came up with.
Light release.
It's soft open, kind of thing.
Oh, light release. I was trying to figure out if it was like turning off and on lights. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Baby steps.
Release the lights. Rather than
doing there are some jurisdictions where you can turn off the lights over the internet at parks. And lock bathroom doors.
I have one question.
Sure. Nice, Councilmember.
Do you guys track work orders, you know, for the through the help desk, so you track all the work orders that Ken does and all that? I'm just curious how much.
Okay, yeah.
Probably has quite a few.
I don't know what the numbers are, but we do track all of them.
Okay.
I know they hate me because I'm always doing one. We need that. Bleeding equipment, Jacob, Brad, someone.
Fleet equipment that basically takes care of all the vehicles that the city owns and equipment like generators and battery trucks and things like that. Total expenses are a little bit over $1 million next year. That includes $170,000 for fuel, $177,000 for repairs, $372,000 for scheduled replacement of equipment and vehicles for our replacement schedule, and then the salaries and fees, equipment rentals that keep things operating is $216,000. And then our unneeded fund balance is in accord with the adopted reserve fund policy. So if you have any questions?
Council? Okay. Councilmember Pepper?
So Brad, I think, or maybe Diane, you said before, for the police vehicles, the $75,000, does that get transferred out of this fund into the general fund, or?
It got transferred from the general fund into this fund.
Into the fleet fund,
yes.
To pay for the vehicles. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, it was from the
It was from the public safety restricted fund. Was it from the cameras or from the new tax?
Oh my God. It's okay. No, I can tell you. That's why I brought the big book.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus.
Not the big book, the answer. This
That's the book we used to get on the council. It was that.
Okay.
It's a test, Diane.
Yeah.
It was to pay for the motorcycles and all
that. Yeah, that's coming from the
public safety restricted fund.
We've redone it several times. So
it's okay, Diane. I got it.
Yeah. No, I answered.
Doing this so I don't ask any more questions.
No, it was the sales tax.
It was at the sales tax?
Yes.
Cool. Okay. If you're wrong.
What? He's thinking of the 100. They did give up $150,000 of photo enforcement money, though, into operations in 2016.
Okay. Oh, so that's a one-time... Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how's that going to affect us in 2017?
That's why we're talking in January.
Okay.
Diane talks very well for me.
So the five-year forecast, when she shows that, will show that things are narrow in 2017.
Yeah,
and
okay.
And part of that is the REIT going away. Remember, we're able to subsidize REIT
they
for
might.
Parks. Which they have, staff advised me, has gone away. They've actually extended that. Is that correct?
Yeah, they were looking at that.
I understand from staff that it got adopted this last legislative session.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the five-year forecast doesn't include that. So there are a couple of there are a couple of one-time things that it'll show in for 2017 in the five-year forecast that things are going to be fairly narrow. But at the same time, we've had that $100,000 go away that was deducting from 2017.
Replacing.
Right, and so that'll be a policy choice. Does council want to, you know, do we want to wean ourselves off of that? Because at some point in time, that may go away, and that's an opportunity cost of capital improvements versus operations. So that's those will be some conversations we'll have so that we can build in the 2017 budget.
Yeah, so we were funding back, I think, $250 into the operations, wasn't it, for a period of time for the last couple of years?
Oh, the hardship, yes.
Yes.
From
when did that go away?
It went away.
It went away this year, 2015, or it's going away 2016?
Oh, no, it went away 2014. 2014 was the last year we had it.
Was the last year we made that hardship?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, we did not have it.
So is there anything else like that one time, what'd you say, 150, that came out of the camera fund into operations for the police department? Is there anything like that anywhere else, that one time shifting to cover operations?
No, it was that 150 and then the REIT, but yeah. I didn't know that they had updated it.
Yeah, that's what that's what I heard from staff, I think, last Thursday. It's recent. That doesn't affect us for 16, just 17.
Yeah, that's for 17.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and I think the last slide is on, before we wrap it up, is on facilities management.
Megan.
Thank you,
Brandon. So Zella expenses are anticipated to be $1.2 million for 2016. About $500,000 of that is for utilities, and then another $120,000 for streetlights. Then generator services, pest control, things like that are the contracted services, about $62,000. Fixing the wastewater treatment plant and repairs down there are $47,000. And then general facility maintenance repairs of the City Hall and Police and Public Works buildings is another $85,000. And then the remainder is salaries and benefits. And then the unbalanced policy, there's $126,000 in the ND fund balance. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Anybody have any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, so wrapping up, the first date is wrong because that's tonight, or yeah.
Because we moved this.
Oh, because we moved?
Yes.
Yeah. So actually next week we'll do the presentation on the utility funds and the CIP funds and special revenue funds. Then we have, during the month of November, we have our two public hearings on the budget where the public can say whatever they want regarding the preliminary budget if they think, you know, things need to be changed or just voice their opinion. And then in December, we have the first reading and then the second reading and adoption of the budget ordinance itself. Now, I just wanted to point out all of these times, if council wants any information on the budget, if there's anything that you're like, well, I don't get this, or I need to know more about this, or any requests, please send them to me, send them to the mayor or to Jean, and these are all opportunities for us to bring information to you if you need more information. And if you want to have time, this is also time in your agendas where you can discuss amongst yourselves in the council meetings regarding the budget. So please feel free to ask. We're here to get you information and whatever you need to help you make your decisions. Happy to help.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, Diane, I just want to thank you again.
Thank you.
Very pleased. Another year of excellent numbers and great job.
Well, thank you very much.
And staff did a lot of work as usual on this. Thank you,
staff.
All
very
much.
Big team effort.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Nothing else. We'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. Thank you again. Great. The next item is item number five. New business item number five, AB 15181. Authorize the mayor to sign phase one cooperation agreement with Kurdall Incorporated regarding Sykes Spring Reserve Municipal Rights. And it sounds like it would be a Mr. Fileberg.
No, Jacob.
Mr. Roberts.
Close enough.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Late this summer, Kurdall Incorporated, that owns the property that Sykes Springs is located on, came to the city and they suggested pursuing an opportunity for a business arrangement where they would bottle water using the city's water right on their property and then eventually sell that water at open market. They came to us, we thought it sounds like a way we could make some money in the city, and so we asked them to go back and draft up an agreement. They did, we reviewed it, made the necessary changes, and that's the phase one cooperation agreement you see before you here tonight. There are a couple steps involved in order to facilitate this process, and that's why we're doing a phase one cooperation agreement, kind of called contingencies, let's say. I'm assuming you've read the document in front of you. If you haven't or have questions about it, feel free to go ahead and ask them, or if somebody wants to entertain a motion, I'm okay with that too.
Councilmember Gamble?
Has the attorney reviewed this?
Yes.
Councilmembers? Councilmember Hanford?
Move to authorize the mayor to sign the phase one cooperation agreement with Kurdall Incorporated regarding Sykes Springs Reserve Municipal Water Supply and expressly authorize further minor revisions deemed necessary and appropriate.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda, we're now moving into the final action section. This is final action number one. This is AB 15178, resolution number 18-2015. It's a 2015 comprehensive plan update, estimated completion. Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, council members, as indicated earlier tonight, this is a resolution that basically establishes November 24th as our estimated completion date for adoption of the comprehensive plan, subject to at least recognizing that it may go longer depending on the amount of public participation we get between now and then. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Councilmember Gamble.
November 24th is the meeting we would look to adopt, or?
To adopt.
Because right now we have it as possible cancellation on the extended agenda.
Then I would suggest maybe just December 1.
December 1, do
that's
the
fine.
Next one.
That's
does
fine.
That work? Okay.
Okay. So is there a motion to approve with that amendment? Councilmember Gamble?
I'll move to approve resolution number 018-2015, sending forth an update timeline and schedule for the city with the revision of set date of December 1st as opposed to November 24th. Council review and adoption of the comprehensive plan.
Second. I have a first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next item is final action number two. This is AB 15182, resolution number 019-2015, naming alley. Mr. Fileberg.
Thank you. We received a request, which is attached to your agenda bill, from two business owners in the old Eagles Club off Lewis Street, just north of the alley there. They had to rename the alley Marketplace Alley because they're kind of wanting to market their hall there as the Hall at Marketplace. As part of their letter, they said that the owner of, Emily Stones, was in favor of that. I went and talked to both her and the owner of Studio Down Lower, who are the two businesses that actually face the alley, and talked to them about changing the name of their, you know, the address of their business if the alley was changed, and neither one of them were in favor of changing their address if the name of the alley changed. And also the owner of Studio Down Low did not like the name of the Marketplace. And then just today, someone commented on the Facebook page or post that said, come to me tonight and express your opinions about naming that alley. And they suggested that we call it Celebration Alley because it's a positive name and matches Destination Alley, and it isn't being used by one building slash business, so it is adaptable to other businesses, events, and won't confuse people. So, if the council would like, they could pass a resolution to change the name or not take any action, and the name won't be changed.
Councilmember Hanford and then Councilmember Camp. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So, just for clarification, if it was changed to Marketplace Alley, the two businesses on that alley would have to change their address?
They would be basically with the new, actually, we've been going through this a lot with the new rollout to have a really accurate address scheme system. And so, if the business is facing the street, it should have an address on that street. Or named alley, so that people don't get confused and are looking on Main Lewis Street somewhere for something when it's not there.
So what's their current address?
Their current address is the same address as the building in the front.
Lewis Street?
Yeah, Lewis Street for Studio Down Low, but the entrance to it is off the back of the building, off the alley, and then the Heavenly Soap is off Main Street with a suite number of some sort that was accessed from the back of the alley. And that would be the same thing that we've done with the Destination Alley, the new business that went in, although this was done the other way around. The alley was there. The tattoo parlor went in behind what used to be, I think, Home Brewing Place. Now has an address off the alley. And then the used to be the car repair place. The new person moved in there, and they're now address off the alley as opposed to Lewis Street.
So is there a way to grandfather in, similar to what we've done with some of the utility things, where if they're already there, they don't need to change their address. But new businesses that would come and locate at that alley would have to change their address?
I think that would make it even more confusing for first responders. And then also, when we have named the alleys in the past, we actually have required everybody to change their addresses when we went through the first round of computer-aided dispatch in the early 1990s. Tyler Lane, Taft Lane, Taylor Lane, those streets that we did in the downtown area with the sort of the apartments off the alleys. When we named those alleys, then we made the people change their address for that reason.
And did we have, I'm sorry, did we have a public hearing on this, or are we required to have a public hearing on this already? I know we've talked about it.
Yeah, talked about all the requests that we notify the area businesses about it. And we did that, posted on Facebook twice. I talked to the businesses that would be affected and brought that information back to you.
And the only feedback that I've received are questions about whether or not the alley, how the alley is going to be used to reflect Marketplace Alley, the title, and will the alley be cleaned up? When you go through there right now, it's an alley. You've got dumpsters and things like that back there. So that was one of the other concerns that was shared. And the last thing that was shared with me was one of security. When you walk through there at night right now, it's real dark. And do people feel safe and secure back there? So those were three things that were shared with me, that if you name it, it's cart, horse, which one comes first? You name something and then it becomes a destination that people take care of, or is it a place that people take care of and something happens and then you name it? But those were some of the things that were shared with me to, for council to think about. You still have the floor, council member.
Yeah, I drove through the alley today, specifically for that. So, that's all for now.
Thank you. So we have Councilmember Camp, Gamble, and then Councilmember Cutback. So, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. So, Brad, who initiated this request? Was it the store owners?
Yes. The store owners. Yeah, the two. Home Brewing and Prison Break Brewery were the two owners that sent the letter to us.
And the other renames, like Destination Alley, those were initiated by?
Destination Alley was initiated by Dream.
Okay.
And at the time that was done, there was no businesses on that street.
Right. and some of the other ones? Are they, what I'm trying to get at, are these initiated by citizens, by store owners? Does the city have a pressing need to go out there and start renaming alleys?
Those two weren't. The other ones, we did Tyler Taft.
We did it?
Adam, we did that specifically for computer-aided dispatch.
Is this, would this be part of that dispatch?
I mean, it ties into that, especially if there's a street name sign there where the door was off of, then you would need to change the name, you know, Valley and say, well,
okay.
Well, yeah, I'm looking for Lewis and there's no other sign, so, you know, it's kind of more intuitive. If you see an address that's Lewis, but there's a street sign that says Marketplace,
right.
Probably going to go down that alley looking for Lewis.
So is the criteria for the naming... Is it, what did the city use for criteria for naming?
When we named the alleys in the early 1990s, as funny as this sounds, it was short dead presidents. Short dead presidents with short names.
I hope we find a different president. Wow. I've been on council for 4.5 years almost, and that's probably the most interesting thing I have heard. That's incredible. What I'm seeing here is a contention between store owners for an alley that they currently reside on. I was wondering, as I read this, and I saw that I think in the letter they're saying that Heavenly Soap did agree, and now they're saying in the upper part that they don't agree?
Well, they did not agree. They agree with changing the name, but they don't agree with changing their address.
Okay.
That's the way it is.
So it's, yeah. But if we go changing the name, it will affect their address?
Yeah.
Okay. Offhand, when I was reading this, I was thinking if this issue were tabled, there's no deadline, we don't have... You know, January 1st, we have to have an address change, or the post office will get mad at us, or something like that. I was really thinking that this is probably an issue that should be tabled and see if the business owners could work out something and come up with a naming convention and perhaps figure out the addressing before the city starts stepping into the middle of it. That would be my recommendation. If the council decides they want to go forward in whatever direction with this, that would be fine as well. But I would like to give them an opportunity to make a decision and find something. I know Destination Alley, I was on Dream at the time when they named it. I didn't know that they had named it. But they went through a consensus process. And I just think that would be applicable here. So my recommendation would be that we table it and let them figure it out. But I'd like to hear what the rest of the council wants to say.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, you know, when I first read, you know, I thought, hey, you know, this is a good idea from the standpoint of, you know, if you're trying to drag, there are businesses back there. But yeah, anytime you're going to go through a naming convention, just like we just got done going through parking, you know, different timelines for parking downside, there's not going to be 100% agreement across, you know, down there. So I guess from my, you know, my perspective, I'm kind of leaning a little bit towards Councilmember Camp's, you know, opinion. But I mean, we're talking about the DMA. I mean, is this something that the downtown, you know, association could take a look at? Because I mean, if there's agreement, hey, we should rename it. Maybe it's just coming up, and it, you know, if there's some sort of, I would feel better if I had an idea of if it was more of a majority, because we're never going to please everybody. I like the idea. We're never going to please, you know, everybody, but having more of an understanding, you know, as a council member, on if it's a majority of business owners are okay with it. I get it. I totally understand the concept of I don't want to change my address, especially if a business has done any sort of marketing, you know, spend associated with that address, whether it's in print or, you know, and or otherwise. You know, maybe... It, you know, and maybe it's a timing issue because you do, you know, you budget for the following year, and then, okay, well, I can budget my marketing spend if there is or not. I'm just, you know, that's a consideration. So, yeah, that would be my thought. I mean, I wouldn't say maybe table, but more of, you know, hey, let's get some more information, you know, more information, the DMA, take a look at it. If we can get some sort of idea if they're, you know, I know we have some folks, you know, here tonight, it sounds like, are, you know, for it. You know, what's the total number of businesses there, or the total number of, you know, of lots? Is it a 2-5? Is it a 5-2 against, or 2-5-4, or, you know, whatever? That sort of thing. That's where I'm at. Because I like the idea.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Cutterback and Councilmember Davis.
I would agree with both of that. When I first saw it, I think naming the alleys is charming. I think it's quaint. I think it can be cool. I think it can drive business back there. Needs to be clean and safe and all that. But in reading the letter that they initiated, you know, looking at that, but then when we have a couple of business owners who, you know, are not in agreement with that, I think we need to slow down, take a look, put it to maybe the chamber or the downtown association and look at what's, you know, what could be a good name. I just got back from New Orleans and I've been in Ashland and they use their alleys pretty well, and it is, you know, it can be a business boom back there, so it can be drawing people back there.
Well, we call it a little Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Because it's where all the store owners go and hang on top shop, and it's very much alive and very much a part. And yeah. I think to just make it indigenous to one business.
I'm sorry, this is a time for council to deliberate.
No, but that's helpful because I think it sounds like there's support maybe doing something, but maybe slowing down, taking a look at what that is and what the name is. So that's what I would recommend.
Yeah. And before we go on to the next person, if there's anybody in the audience that would like to submit comments, you can certainly submit some comments in response to some of what you've heard today. And we can share that with the council members. The other thing, too, is that we have public comment at the beginning of the meetings and be able to come and share those thoughts also then. So, yep. Councilmember Davis.
Yes, I agree with both statements, so I won't belabor the point. But I balk at changing somebody's address, and that's a little more serious than what we had initially heard in the beginning, and so that requires a little more investigation and discussion. So, but I'm in agreement with everything else that was said. It is a good idea, but it should be a good idea for the majority of people. So.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I'm in total agreement. I would just say it would be nice to hear from those business owners here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I appreciate all the work, you know, Brad, with the research and stuff like that. Maybe you weren't aware of the time frame, but yeah, when we meet, that public discussion is right at the beginning. So in the future, that would be great. But flip side of that, I'd love to hear that after this kind of discussion is going through. We already know that there are business owners that are opposed to it, so we don't need to hear business owners come and say, yeah, we're opposed to it. We'd love to hear after the discussion's taking place and there's some collaboration going on, then come and say, here's what we've talked about and here's some ideas.
Thank you. Okay, anything further? All right, I'm understanding that some of the questions that council has, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I'm just curious. What options do we have?
I'm going to get you flags. I'm going to throw something at you.
What options? I don't want to do an outright denial because there is some interest in this. I really would like to turn it over to some group that can spend the time and look into it. If it's not tabling it, the issue, if there's some way that we can postpone this, I just don't know procedurally what we should do to delay a decision on this. And I think Brad just waved his hand, as long as it doesn't involve short president names.
We could do long president names. My suggestion would just be to not take any action out of this time and wait for a contingent of area business owners to come down and say, you know, 70% of us think it should be named this, you know, something like that, or 100% maybe.
I would like that. Cool.
Okay. So what I was going to summarize, but if that's the direction that we want to go, what would the DMA think? What does the chamber think? We can reach out to them and find out what those two organizations think. We can follow up on the question of what do other businesses think. So if you'd prefer to take the tact of just having people come to us, we can do that. But those were two things that I had identified that we could, as staff, go out and reach out for. Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I'd say both. Because, you know, the... I'd say both, because the other thing I was going to say is that if, you know, we have the DMA and the chamber, hey, are there other alleys that we want to, is there anywhere else we want to?
Let's do all the alleys.
We don't have to do all of them, but I'm just saying, if it's a good idea on one side, that you know, good for the goose. Exactly.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and follow up with DMA, the chamber. We'll encourage businesses that would be affected by this to talk to one another, come forward with a consolidated letter or public comment on what they'd like to see have done.
All right.
So there's no action taken. It doesn't mean that it's a denial. It just means that we'll be coming back to this. All right. Next item on the agenda this evening is council member reports. Let's start off with a report from the Legislative Affairs Committee, then we'll go to individual council member reports. So, Legislative Affairs Committee.
The committee did meet today, this evening. Basically, we looked over the legislative priorities and just sort of reviewed that, and so that will be coming further down the road.
Mm-hmm. Working. 2 weeks for the legislative committee review for it, if I can, if I don't mind.
No.
And it will be brought back to council in 3 weeks?
Three, four weeks.
We'll have the day off on November 3rd, so sometime around November 10th, something will be brought back to council. And we also discussed the possibility of having interviews of selected candidates as proposed by the legislative committee. Sorry.
Yeah, I showed up late, so I missed a goodly portion of it. Yeah, we did get copies of the lobbyist RFPs and a scorecard. We're going to look at those, and we'll be scoring them and setting up interview with the council, and that will be coming in 2 or 3 weeks.
November. Well, yeah, 2 weeks.
Forget already. So,
okay. I barely remember.
About 10. Liz has got it down. So, anyways, that will be coming up in a few weeks. You'll be hearing more about it. So, but we just got the packets tonight, so we haven't even been able to look at it. And we'll go over it and review it and discuss it at the next meeting that we have, which will be in 2 weeks, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get back with you on that.
Okay.
So, that's about it.
Great. Thank you. So we'll go to individual council member reports now. Council member Gamble.
I two things. I wanted to start with an apology for having to miss the last couple that had some personal family affairs that I had to get in order on. That kind of leads me to my second part, which is a thank you. I wanted to thank Chief. I wanted to thank your officers and your staff, for those that do know, we've been carrying my mom as Alzheimer's dementia, and it got to the point where we did have to, over the last couple of weeks, put her in full-time care. And going down that process, sometimes you do have to involve the authorities, become very agitated. And anyway, long story short, Officer or Jason Southard and your staff and team were fantastic. Helping both my father and I and my wife through a very trying time. I just wanted to, a heartfelt thanks and appreciation. The sheriffs that responded to were fantastic, but, you know, Jason just took control of the situation, and I had a chance to thank him personally today. I just wanted to thank you. And then also just a thank you to Evergreen Health Monroe, that it was fantastic to have a hospital here that could take care, and it was just good. So just a thank you there. So that's it.
Thank you, Councilmember. Councilmember Davis.
Nothing tonight.
Councilmember Camp.
Nothing tonight.
Councilmember Cutterback.
No.
Councilmember. Okay. So at the staff, Mr. Farrell.
Thank you, Mayor. So there's a written report that's attached to update.
in your agenda. In addition to that, just a couple things. One, coming up, the Sky Performing Arts, their season is starting, and they have a play called The Gemma Game. And it opens this Friday, October 16th, and there are several shows over the next 2 weeks. And you can check out information as far as show times and whatnot at skyperformingarts.com. That's at the Wagner Performing Arts Center. Then also this Saturday from 9 to 1, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Lakeside Park is the Farm to Table Farmers Market. It's their harvest fest. So
it'll
be lots of fun stuff there. That's it.
Thank you. I'm sorry, that's 9 to 1?
Yes.
Fine. Thank you.
Ms. Nelson?
Two things. In your agenda packet is the report on estimated revenues for 2015. And that's a state requirement for the budget process. And it's to let you know how the current year's revenues are coming in. And basically, we're anticipating current year revenues to come in to bottom line at the same as budget. So we're close enough to budget percentage. So no red flags, nothing that's really concerning us at all. But if you get a chance, please take a look at that. The other thing is, remember we talked about solid waste contract and whether to go out for an RFP or whatnot, and council requested a customer survey be done, customer satisfaction survey. I went to the state contracting site, got four vendors, and contacted all of them. We selected one, and they're on the East Coast, but they do surveys at a good price, and I've been working with them, and they're starting the survey tomorrow. They're doing a sample out of our total utility customers. They're going to be contacting 500 of them, and it's a telephone survey because statistically that works out the best, and they're asking all different questions about the aspects of the garbage vendor itself, the customer service that they get here at City Hall, billing questions. It's a pretty good survey. They're succinct, so they're not going to take people's time a lot, but they're going to get some good information, and these guys really know what they're doing, so I think we're going to get some useful information rather than just numbers. And so I just wanted to let you know, in case people call you or ask you about it tomorrow night, they're going to start.
Question on the phone calls. Where do they get the data for the phone calls? Is it from our own?
From our database.
Okay. So if you have a landline at home that you're no longer using,
we get cell phones.
Okay, you
when
hit cell phones.
People sign up for utilities, we ask for their cell
phone. I should update my phone number here then. Okay, sounds good. All right, any questions? All right, Pam.
Nothing from tonight.
Okay, Chief.
Nothing to see.
Okay, Brad, Mr. Fauberg.
There's just something. Late this afternoon, we had a water main break up on East Vermont Drive, and so they fixed that this evening. It was located right below a storm drain line, so they had to kind of dig up a big hole to get it fixed. But fortunately, that's on the schedule for next year to replace that water line, which we'll be talking about next week. It's kind of a preview.
Did you want to give your 30 minutes parking space request update?
The speech isn't 30 minutes.
Yeah, 30 minutes. Yes, about parking for 30 minutes. The same people who requested the name of the alley also sent you another letter that requested the 30-minute parking in front of their business, and the council requested that we talk to them and ask them if they were okay with 15 to match the other 15-minute zones out of town, and they said yes, they were. So, if the council would like to act on that, we can bring something back to you, or
that would be just north of the alley.
Just north of the alley, yeah.
Okay, council, would you like this to come back for consideration at least?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and we'll put that on the extended agenda for consideration. We'll go over that when we get to the extended agenda. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm not sure you're aware. The council, the Chamber of Commerce got a grant from the county using LTAC money, right? That was LTAC money, I think, from the county to put in wayfinding signs for downtown.
Sweet.
And so we've been working with them for on locations and what they look like and how to kind of tie it into the entire city, so in case we ever get anybody to do other wayfinding signs for other parts of town, we have kind of a consistent theme, because I went around and took pictures of our wayfinding signs, and there's like 8 different styles of signs that we have out there. Because if we get a little money, we buy a sign, and then the next time someone else buys a sign. So after lots and lots of iterations of using our logo and above and below and things, we kind of came up with that for the wayfinding sign. That would be something to be on Highway 2, kind of Lewis Street, pointing downtown. We also had someone on the logo on the bottom, or a little arrowy kind of thing like that. But we decided that probably the best way would be to have it on the top. So, for example, at the Highway 522 and Highway 2, where the big loop comes around, since the chamber has money now, they could pay for that part, and then sometime later, if we get some money, we can bolt that sign onto the bottom without destroying the logo on the bottom. So that's what we were thinking about doing, and hopefully that they can get those installed in time to meet their grant deadline. So if there's any comments, we'll call on you.
Yeah. So the city of Everett does something similar with a logo up on the top in their downtown, and yeah, they're just little tiny bolts that you have to get up close to really notice them. So they're growing signs of Xfinity. If Comcast becomes Xfinity, you just unbolt the sign and you put the new sign in, and the directional sign is to the new name. And so that's how we came up with that particular design. Is everybody now the funds are coming by way of the chamber, you know, from the county. Is everybody okay with that design? It's going in our right of ways. So
I like it.
Do we have a say?
Yes. It's going in our right of ways, and it will develop our sign program for some time. There are places here in town, like right over here, there are wood signs that are sort of carved that say, you know, Sky River here and this, and there's a it's really fun. Go take a look at a map right next to Gene's office, right in front of Gene's office, and there's an aerial photo with photographs of all the signs at their locations for throughout town, and you'll see that there's a hodgepodge. A variety of signs, and we're trying to come up with a consistent sign program. So, Councilmember Cuddeback.
That was just my question. I mean, we've had inconsistencies. So they got a grant from the county to do the sign. It goes in our right-of-way, so it has to meet our sign code, but can we dictate what colors and design?
Right.
And yes, okay. And also, this is not by the chamber.
Yeah.
They're okay with it.
Yeah, the best tactic is to collaborate and obviously agree, but I was just saying, you know, how far can we push colors and things like that?
Yeah.
And it looks like those colors aren't quite what match our colors on the website.
Well, because you look at the screen and it comes out of the printer, and, you know, we don't have color calibrated printers, so we intended it to be a website color.
Yeah.
Or as close as somebody can get it in sign making materials.
Yeah, so what Councilmember Gamble and I were sidebarring about is just that you've got the universal colors right there. If you hold up one of those signs, you've got green, you've got the blue, the brown, so the brown museum and parks, the blue is, you know, shopping and dining. It pretty much says it right there. Yeah, hospital blue. So we're using the standard colors that you would use for those types of uses. It's the top. You can see that we're using the logo. The one thing that we're doing that's different is we've got yellow up top instead of going for white. But yeah, we tried to maintain those colors for the top part. So the yellow is, I guess, the yellow wall. Yeah. They're on a short timeline to purchase a sign, so if there's significant concerns, then we'll go ahead and let them know to order the signs. Okay, Council?
Okay.
Okay, all right, we'll do that. Thank you. All right, let's go into mayor and administrative. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see Dave.
I knew you were back there.
I was just trying to save my voice.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks. Okay, mayor and administrative reports. First thing for me, you'll see Monroe this week. There's got some things that have gone on over the last couple weeks. The most significant thing, I think, that has happened over the last 2 weeks is I attended a U.S. Highway 2 Safety Coalition meeting, and over the course of the meeting, we talked a little bit about the general lack of funding in the last legislative session for transportation improvements in the Sky Valley. And we talked a bit about what Mr. Walzer spoke about this evening with 522. And after the meeting, I went ahead and spoke with Mayor Eslick from the city of Sultan, asked her about her concerns about 522, and she agreed that we needed to get, you know, 522 funded. And so, you know, the mantra is fund and finish 522. So after speaking with her, I put together a letter. We were on a tight time frame in terms of trying to get something out this week so that the county might, as part of putting together their legislative priorities, include that in their legislative priorities to help support this. She and I both signed a letter, and I also met with the chair of the school board. And the chair of the school board, Katie Woods, and I drafted a resolution that the school board considered and voted on last night unanimously to support improvements to 522. And so in your stack of paper there, you'll see a joint letter between me and Mayor Eslick to the county. That went out this afternoon, and attached to that is the resolution from the Monroe School Board requesting the funding. I've prepared for your interest. It is actionable this evening if you'd like to, but again, I just put it there this evening, a resolution that the City Council could consider approving. We can certainly bring it back next week if you'd like. To do something similar to what the school board did last night, which is to express interest in, or rather to make a formal request to fund and finish 522. So that's at your positions there, and we can certainly bring that back next week if you like. Councilmember Gamble? Councilmember Hanford, and then Councilmember Gamble.
Is there a number that you would want to be put in for the motion?
Resolution number 020.
Well, we have already discussed this. I mean, it's nothing new at all. So we've been talking about this for a long time. So I'll go ahead and make the motion. I'll move to pass resolution number 020-2015, requesting the state of Washington appropriate sufficient funding to finish State Route 522, specifically the projects State Route 522, Paradise Lake Road to Snohomish River widening, and State Route 522, Paradise Lake Road interchange.
Second.
I have a first and I have a second. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, we've, Legislation and Affairs Committee has talked about it. We've included it in our letter to this, so I mean, it's pretty much, we can do it with confidence for with those that are not present. We've already spoke on it, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have a first and I have a second from Councilmember Hanford and Councilmember Gamble, respectively. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. So the next items that we will likely be doing will be reaching out to the city of Gold Bar and potentially the city of Snohomish. We may also reach out to folks in the Maltby area, because I learned at the school board meeting last night from Jim, whose last name I momentarily
forgot,
Jim Scott, that he lives in that area, and a lot of people will bypass that bottleneck on 522 by going through their neighborhoods. And so it's not just a Monroe, it's not just a Sky Valley, but it's also a Maltby area issue. And so we'll be reaching out to invite other councils to pass similar resolutions. And I appreciate the vote this evening. Thank you. I have other things, but I don't want to keep it much longer with my stuff. So does anybody have any questions about Monroe this week? Okay, you can see the numbers are in there and everything for the revenues. And we'll go ahead and turn over to Mr. Basil.
Thank you. The only thing I have for you this evening is in your workplace, there's an email that Liz has printed out for you in regards to selecting the Board of Health representative. We talk about this every year. Currently, Mayor Kara Guzak from Snohomish is the representative. We've kept her in that position, or council's agreed to over the last several years. If you're okay with that again, we will send a letter of support. If you would like to do something different, let me know as well.
Okay. And we don't have an immediate timeline on this. If anybody's interested in serving in that position or has any concerns about that, please reach out to us. We'll put it on the extended agenda to make a motion probably in about 3 weeks or so. Like that, if you've got any interest, you can let us know and we'll follow up. Mayor Guzak is a council member. She's up for election this year also. And so I guess it would be appropriate to wait until mid-November to decide on this. We'll put it in the extended agenda sometime after the election.
Great.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on to next week's agenda, the extended agenda.
Very bulky. October 20th, 2015 agenda. Under public hearing, we have the 2016 revenue sources, consideration of possible property tax increases. We've got the consent agenda. Under executive session, we have potential litigation. Unfinished business, we have discussion of the second addendum to the concessionaire agreement for H3O. We have the 2016 presentation for utility and CIP funds. Discussion on the comprehensive plan update and discussion of impact fee deferral system. Under new business, we have a resolution declaring the city's intent to absorb the transportation benefits district. We have authorized Mayor to sign Veterans Memorial donation.
And just to put a spotlight on that, that it's the memorial out at Lake Ty.
I think they removed it last week or something, about a week or so ago. They started them in.
Okay, cool.
And then we have the ordinance setting property tax levy. First reading. Any additions or deletions?
Okay, I don't know. It's first, Councilmember Cutback.
I saw in your mayor report something about the H3O in there that I gotta pull it up again. Did you say that they've reviewed and given back comments on our addendum?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was in last week's packet, I think.
Oh, okay, I didn't see it in my email. It didn't go through email, then it was in last week's packet.
Right, it was in last week's packet on the website.
Okay, great.
If you're not having luck finding it, let us know and we'll.
No, I'm sure we'll be there. Okay, thanks.
Welcome. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I just want to let you know that I will be late next week. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay, so the extended agenda.
I will be out next week as well. I'm going to celebrate my birthday. So just I'd like to be here.
29.
Okay, Councilmember Gamble.
October 27th, I will be on vacation out of town.
I guess hunting?
Yeah.
And so, Gene, you'll be out on the 20th, and Councilmember Gamble will be out on the 27th. All right. And November 3rd is canceled. And we'll go ahead and we will reschedule the salary commission appointment. So for sometime October 27th or November 10th, I'll work with staff to find out when the least impacted meeting is. It's probably the 27th of October. All right. Anything further, Gene? Okay, and we do have a need for an executive session this evening. So we're going to go into executive session. The citation for this is RCW 42.30.110, subsection 1, subsection G, review the performance of a public employee. This will be for approximately 5 minutes. There will be action to follow, if not, just to adjourn, at least. Thank you, everybody. Okay, we're back out of executive session, being no business this evening. So I have three lights. If all of you are going to make a motion to adjourn. Councilmember Hanford.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
First from Councilmember Hanford. Second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much for your service. Have a great evening.
Well, that's going to become the tradition now.
Like all these strobe light effects.